Hello and welcome to Quidachievous Marcus & Cut podcast, your weekly insight into the topics and trends that we have been exploring for you here at Quidachievous. Remember, so you don't miss future episodes, be sure to hit the follow button on whichever streaming platform you are listening on, or by following hashtag QCB comment on LinkedIn. I'm your host, Andrew Cartwright, an investment manager based out of our Birmingham office. And this week, I'm delighted to be joined by Richard Carter, our head of fixed interest research, and retail and consumer equity analyst, Mamta Valecha. Welcome, Richard and Mamta. So after a turbulent few weeks for equity markets, particularly in the US, last week actually started off on a pretty good note with a decent upturn on Monday and Tuesday. But that was very short-lived, and those early gains were more than wiped out by the end of the week, with, again, US technology stocks bearing the brunt of the sell-off. And in terms of news flow, we had US consumer confidence figures released, and there was some further talk on a possible Ukraine peace agreement. But the key driver was, once again, tariffs, notably around car imports this time. And we do have another package of tariffs due to be announced this week in what Donald Trump refers to as Liberation Day. Richard, could you talk us through those big market moves of last week? And what do you think we can expect from Liberation Day? It certainly sounds very dramatic, but given the negative impact this is all having on equity markets, and that Trump is ultimately a populist politician, surely he has to start reining things in at some point for his own benefit.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm quite surprised that they seem to be willing to put up with so much potential damage to the US economy in the short term and to market sentiment by going through with some of these tariff changes. But there seems no, certainly comments over the weekend from Trump suggests there's no, no sign of them backing down on them. I mean, what we're hoping and to see in this so-called Liberation Day is a bit of certainty on what US trade policy is going to be, because it seems to be changing on an almost daily basis at the moment. And the idea is that there would have been some, careful, thought out view from the US administration on how to put reciprocal tariffs on different countries, what sort of things they're going to sort of put into the calculation, which countries are included, and maybe sort of how long we can expect them to be in place, and sort of, how other countries can apply for possible exemptions. I think the problem is that, as I just said, we know that Trump changes his mind on a fairly regular basis. So how much certainty there will be from this Liberation Day, I think, is in question. We'll see how much pain they're willing to tolerate in terms of the economy. But certainly, if you look at what economic forecasts are showing now, there are some certain downgrades to GDP estimates for this year, some of them sort of fairly major. So that is a definite concern for markets. So no surprise that we're seeing, some quite a lot of volatility at the moment.
And turning attention now to the UK, there are a couple of key announcements last week, and notably we had the UK inflation data for February released, and that was closely followed by Rachel Reeves' spring budget statement. And Richard, just starting off with that inflation data, the Bank of England had kept interest rates unchanged at 4.5% earlier in the month, so February's inflation report was always going to be keenly anticipated. Firstly, could you give us your thoughts on the latest inflation figures and what this might mean for the potential trajectory for further interest rate cuts this year? And secondly, with UK economic growth and fiscal planning not having quite gone to plan so far for Rachel Reeves, what did you make of that spring statement and the measures announced?
So I think, firstly, on the inflation front, I think the numbers, for February were good. They were better than expected, and that's all great. However, the big spike in inflation, not as big as it was during COVID, after COVID, we should point out, but the sort of upcoming spike in inflation is probably still going to happen. Some estimates pointing out, suggesting that CPI could rise to as high as 4% in the short term. So I think the Bank of England would have been relieved by the February numbers, but I don't think it changes anything in the short term. I think they'll want to see this get through this upcoming spike. It's been driven by energy prices and tax rises and all the rest of it. They'll want to get through that, make sure there's no second round effects, and then they can probably carry on cutting rates later on. So there's two cuts priced in for the market this year. That didn't really change as a result of the February inflation numbers. The other, yeah, as you say, the other big thing last week in the UK was the spring statement. This was supposed to be a complete non-event, and actually all the sort of, you know, tax and spending changes supposed to be made in the autumn in the budget, but because of the OBR forecasts back in October being, you know, a little bit too optimistic, it turned out to be quite a big event for Rachel Reeves. I mean, I think she sort of passed the test. I mean, she had to cut spending to make sure she met her fiscal targets. She did that in a just about credible way. Although, of course, when Johnson starts talking about sort of government efficiencies and cracking down on tax evasion, you start to sort of question the numbers. But I think overall she passed the test. The issue for the UK has not changed. Growth is too slow. Borrowing is too high. They need to try and get that under control. And if they don't, then come the next budget, they'll be making more savings and potentially tax rises as well.
Thank you, Richard. And in addition to last week, we also had UK retail figures released by the Office for National Statistics. And despite flagging consumer confidence, high interest rates and lackluster economic growth, UK retail figures actually rose by 1% in February. And this was the second monthly increase in a row, and notably higher than I expected, given that the general consensus with what was for a slight contraction. And in the UK, High Street has certainly faced a number of challenges in recent years, in addition to the underlying long-term trend towards online shopping. And whilst I've noticed, anecdotally at least, that our towns and city centres do seem to be busy, recent results from the sector seem to have been somewhat lacklustre. Next, the clothes retailer does, however, seem to be bucking this trend, and I'm delighted to be joined by Mamta to find out more about that. So, Mamta Next reported their full-year results last week, and the market reaction was very positive. Could you tell us more about those results and what is it about Next that they're doing differently?
Hi, Andrew. Yes. So Next last week showed why in a very fragile sector, it is unique and it's crowned one of the UK's best retailer. And this is true from both an operational and a management execution point of view. Now, given the conservative nature of Next's management, an upgrade to financial year 2026 was anticipated. However, no one expected this to come in at the start of the year. You know, after all, Next is only 2 months into their first quarter. And while the upgrade, you know, may seem small, so full price sales for the year are now expected to grow 5%. This is compared to 3.5% previously, and profit before tax was raised by 2%. But it stood apart from, you know, the raft of consumer companies reporting weak trading, you know, giving guidance below consensus or being very cautious on outlook. And this is exactly why, you know, shares were up over 10% on the day. Now, as the year progresses, we expect some weakness emerging in the UK, given headwinds for employers on the back of wages and national insurance rises. And in this scenario, we prefer to own more defensive and high quality plays within UK retail, and Next pretty much fits this bucket. It is likely that the lower income consumer in the UK will be most negatively impacted, both from an employment and income perspective. However, Next sits in the mid-market sweet spot amongst the fashion brands, which makes it more defensive. And Next also continues to innovate in their own brand and non-Next brands and improving their value proposition. However, I also wanted to highlight two key growth angles that have emerged over the past 5 years for Next, which remain quite interesting in our view. Firstly is their total platform business, where Next is providing third-party brands such as Reese and Spoon end-to-end online services, which is pretty much unmatched in the UK and would take a very long time for another retailer to replicate. Secondly is also their online overseas business. These includes markets such as, you know, the Middle East, and has been significantly outperforming the UK business. It is far from mature and provides a long runway for growth. So putting this together, you know, more income streams helps to diversify the business and should result in less risk from a fashion miss, and therefore lowers our volatility in earnings, which should award the group a re-rating in our view.
So certainly some positive news from Next, and they do seem to be adapting their business model going forward. But just now looking in terms of the bigger picture within the global and local retail and consumer sectors, Mamta, have you seen any specific trends emerging, you know, whether that be in response to recent economic conditions or the longer term structural changes?
Yeah, so in the near term, as I mentioned, we do see risks to the UK consumer as we go through the year, driven by slowing disposable income and potential job losses as the national insurance and wage increases take place, and then the subsequent increases in inflation as retailers pass this cost on to the consumer in the form of higher prices. Tariff headlines also continue to impact sentiment. You know, in the US, consumer sentiment is declining and inflation expectations are rising, which is a bad combination. Consumers are simply concerned about, you know, rising prices for essentials such as groceries, gas, and household supplies. You know, it's obvious, you know, consumers simply do not like uncertainty. And in times like this, discretionary spending gets hit and is, you know, usually the low-income consumer who gets hit first and also the hardest. So we are trying to navigate this environment. You know, we're trying to stick with companies with strong fundamentals, so such as low income exposure, good guidance management, positive earnings revision, the ability for, you know, management to offset costs, and also simply very strong execution by management. We also think having a successful omni-channel formula is still key. Online is back to taking market share versus bricks and mortars after the post-COVID normalization. Consumers prefer to have the option of, you know, returning and collecting items to and from a store, as it is fast, it's convenient, and it's also cheaper. And finally, you know, one theme that stood out, you know, in the most recent results to me is that brand momentum and desirability matters, especially in the age of social media. So while consumers are feeling the pinch, you know, they are willing to pay for innovation and newness. And we have seen examples of this, you know, in the sporting world, for example, with Adidas outperforming the likes of Nike and Puma, and also in the luxury space where the likes of Richemont, Hermès, Prada are simply outperforming, you know, Kering, who owns Gucci, for example.
Thank you, ma'am, and to Richard for those great insights, and to you all for listening. Did you enjoy our discussion on the podcast today? We love to hear from our listeners, so please review the show now wherever you're listening and share it on your socials and tag us at Could Achieve It. To make sure you don't miss a future episode, tap the subscribe button. We'll be back next week, and in the meantime, head over to our website, www.couldachieveit.com, where you can read the accompanying market overview as well as subscribe to our weekly comment newsletter. You can also stay up to date with our thoughts on market news, industry insights, and our upcoming events and webinars on our website or our social media pages. Finally, do you have any questions you'd like to ask one of our experts for our next podcast? Simply ask them via the weekly comments page on our website. We love to hear your questions. And that's it for today. So thank you again to Richard and Mamta for your time and to you all for listening. See you next time.